Good afternoon, members. Welcome to the Education Finance Committee meeting. The first order of business is the approval of the minutes on January 24th. Representative Erickson moves approval of the minutes.
I do move.
On January 24th. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. We also have a new member of the Education Finance team who's going to come down and introduce themselves to the members of the committee. So go ahead and take a seat behind the... if you could just tell us your name, where you're from, and if you could be an animal, what animal would you be and why?
Oh, man. My name is Shayna Holmes. I'm from Owatonna, Minnesota, and I just graduated from the U. For animal, I'd probably be an eagle. Not to suck up, but... because I always wanted to fly, and it'd be really fun.
That's a great answer. What'd you major in at the U of M?
Political science and English.
Oh, good. Well, welcome to the committee. We look forward to working with you this year, and you'll find out that this is a pretty fun committee with some really good people on it. So thanks a lot. Members, today we're going to be taking testimony on the Early Childhood Education Scholarships Implementation Plan, and if time permits, we'll be moving House File 1828, Representative Anderson's bill regarding the geographic distribution of the scholarship funds. That will be laid over for possible inclusion. If we get to it, that'll be laid over for possible inclusion in a later bill. So who do we have from the department here to discuss this? Ta-da! And like magic, they show up. Welcome to the committee, and what we'll do is let you please go through the implementation plan. We'll take some questions from members.
Great.
And take the conversation from there. So welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Dr. Kim Cadigan. I'm the director of the Minnesota Office of Early Learning. And if I could be an animal, I'd probably be a black-capped chickadee.
A what?
What'd you say? A black-capped chickadee.
Does everyone else know what that is? Because I don't.
It's a bird.
Of course I know what it is. Yes, yes, of course.
Backyard bird.
It's seen in the area from the jump show.
Sir, please state your name as well.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Kevin McHenry with the Department of Education. I don't know if I have to answer the animal question as well, but since I'm here, I think I'd have to say grizzly bear for several reasons. You know, obviously a fan of the outdoors, and I'm a big fly fisherman, and so you can see them in rivers quite often. So.
Okay, that was just like for the pages, like not every testifier has to come forward with this, although it may make for a more interesting hearing. So welcome, thank you, and please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. As I said, I'm Karen Cadigan, and the director of the Office of Early Learning. First of all, you may recall that the issue of the office came before this committee last legislative session as a strategy to provide alignment, accountability, and braiding of funds and programs that reach young children and their families. The office was, in fact, created in August by Commissioner Casilius, who has been charged by the governor with leading early childhood initiatives. The Office of Early Learning is not a place, but a cost-neutral leadership and management structure that brings together folks from the agencies of education, health and human services, and is led by myself, Deputy Director of Health Jim Koppel, and Assistant Commissioner of Human Services Aaron Sullivan Sutton. This cross-agency leadership team also works closely with the Children's Cabinet. And I would say there's tremendous enthusiasm for and potential efficiency created by this improved governance structure. So on behalf of the Office of Early Learning, I'm happy to be here today to share with you the Early Childhood Education Scholarships Implementation Plan. Thank you for seeing fit to appropriate funds to support the early learning of preschoolers whose parents may struggle to afford early education experiences. Improving children's access to quality experiences is one of the most proven ways to boost their readiness for school. This is especially true for low-income children who, if they participate in lower quality programs, actually can have negative effects. We're especially pleased that this plan highlights the important role of parents as children's first and most important teachers and the drivers of children's educational experiences. And I just want to make sure everyone got a copy of the plan. There are extras if you need one. So to develop the scholarships implementation plan, we used evaluation data from the pre-K allowances program and the early childhood scholarships program that both took place from about 2007 to 2009. Based on these past programs, we set the per child scholarship amount at $4,000 to be used for providing children access to quality programs. In this current plan, the scholarship dollars are used only for increasing children's access to time and quality programs, and not for program development, such as investing in training or materials. The overall plan has three main components: who can receive the scholarships, how are the scholarships distributed, and for what programs can the scholarships be used. The statute provides the detail on the who. Families who have a child that is 3 to 5 years old by September 1st and have an income equal or less than 47% of the state median income, or who meet other eligibility through other public funding sources such as free and reduced lunch, Head Start, or MFIP. That was all in the statute. This implementation plan then required decisions about distribution and use of the scholarships. These issues required making tough choices. The $2 million per year appropriation is sufficient to provide scholarships for only 1% of the state's eligible 3 and 4 year olds. With those resources then, we made choices about distribution for use that on balance do four things. One, they use the money they use this public money in an accountable manner. Two, they distribute the money fairly across the state. Three, they promote a range of choices for families. And four, they allow us to learn from and improve this plan in the future. So our first decision was about accountability. Scholarships can be used only in programs that are 3 or 4 star rated by the state's voluntary quality rating and improvement system, ParentAware. The reasons for this are several fold. Provide some assurance that public resources will be used in programs with quality components, and it provides incentives to families to choose programs based on quality, and it provides incentives for programs to participate in quality rating and improvement. The other option would have been to link it to licensing standards, and since licensing standards relate only to children's health and safety, we believe that the use of these early child education scholarships should be targeted to programs that are of a higher level of quality than what licensing only ensures. Our second decision was the statewide distribution of the scholarships. Our thinking on this lines right up with Representative Anderson's bill. About half of the scholarship dollars will be available for families in Greater Minnesota. We made this decision in part based on the statewide distribution of children in poverty. About 40% of Minnesota's low-income children live in Greater Minnesota, and in part because it just seemed the fair thing to do. Our third decision was to ensure that families who received a scholarship actually had a range of choices, including family child care, center-based child care, as well as Head Start and school-based pre-K programs. In the four initial pilot areas, this range already exists, but in other areas of the state, it is the range of quality-rated options is still being built. Because programs are still in the process of opting into ParentAware, we wanted to give an opportunity to provide scholarships to communities that are beyond these four initial areas, but that might be a few months from now ready to participate. So while those communities are not named, those are the designated communities in Greater Minnesota. Finally, we want to learn from this implementation plan and be able to know how and why it worked to increase families' access to quality choices and to improve children's school readiness, so that if the legislature sees fit to increase this opportunity to more of the state's preschoolers, we will be prepared to have good information about exactly what it would do, how much it would cost, how it would work, and what impact it would have. Thanks again for investing resources in the future of Minnesota, and I'm happy to address any comments about the implementation plan at this time.
Thank you very much, and we'll go to Mr. McHenry, and then we'll open up for questions and comments from members of the committee. And thank you for, you're going to be sticking around though, right? You're not going anywhere?
I'm here as long as you want me here.
As long as I want, really.
You're the chair.
Good answer. Welcome to the committee. Proceed with your testimony, Mr. McHenry.
Mr. Chair, members, I was here actually just Kevin McHenry, Department of Education, was here just to provide some assistance with Dr. Cadigan on this. We appreciate you all taking the time to hear such an important issue. We feel that this is we appreciate the investment that was provided, that you all provided last session for these early scholarships, and we feel that this is a great initiative, and we are very supportive of it. So we appreciate you taking the time to take a hearing on this and debate this a little bit further and get some more information.
Mr. McHenry, the implementation plan, is this a proposal that's seeking input from the legislature, or is this a notification of what you'll be doing?
Mr. Chair, members, this plan is in response to legislation passed last year. The plan of providing how these funds would be implemented. I think the input we've had is based on conversations that have taken place in the legislature in the previous sessions, and we continue to gather as much support and input from you all moving forward on this plan.
So is it, Mr. McHenry, is it subject to amendment?
Mr. Chair, members, this is the implementation plan that the Department of Education brought forward of how we intend to implement the early childhood scholarships.
I understand that, but is it subject to amendment, or are you not authorized to answer that question?
Mr. Chair, members, great question. I think that I don't know if this is open to amendment. If we're going to make some changes, it might be something that would have to be done legislatively throughout the session, but we certainly are open to discussing what has been presented here today with you and all members of the committee moving forward.
And Mr. McHenry, I just want to be clear. If you're not authorized to answer that question, I don't want to put you in a spot of, there was a word I was not allowed to use when Governor Polenyi was in charge, was veto. I couldn't say that word. I was prohibited from using it, even though I was a member of the legislature. So I totally understand. If you're not authorized to answer those questions, just that there's obviously, outside of the issue of quality ratings, which I support and have supported, this was an issue that was debated by the legislature last session, was not included in part of the negotiations. And from this, as someone who was involved in the negotiations, this is being implemented absent statutory authority. And so I'm seeking guidance on what statutory authority, and Ms. Cadigan, you can chime in as well. Under what statutory authority is the department using to implement this plan? Because it's not in law.
I'm happy to answer that. Our understanding of our task was given the specifics outlined in the statute, which defined who could receive scholarships, was to define an implementation plan that best used the public money, and we believe that's what we have done.
And this this plan, is the commissioner authorized this?
Yes.
Okay. And did Ms. Yates write this?
Sorry?
Did Barb Yates write this, the implementation
plan? No.
Who wrote it?
I did, along with some of the staff sitting behind me, Amanda Varley and Lisa Caravo, Department of Education.
Mr. McHenry, anything to add?
Mr. Chair, members, no. I think that covers up who wrote the report.
Okay. Questions and comments? Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd just like to thank Ms. Cadigan and Mr. McHenry for coming forward before the committee. And I think you both know, I think members of the committee are aware that I authored legislation that was debated in by the legislature and certainly by the House last year, which I think flows along with the intent of what you're wanting to do with the scholarship. So with regards to me supporting the link to quality in that, certainly you're not going to get a quarrel with me. I think it's a good idea. I think if we're going to put money into early childhood, and actually any money that we spend of the taxpayers ought to be spent on programs that are of quality and ones that we believe to be of the nature to show benefit to young children in the area of school readiness. That is certainly the goal. However, my efforts were not successful. And I would hold out great hope that we could be successful this year. I think there were a range of circumstances that contributed to that string of events that unfortunately led the legislation from not getting all the way through to the governor and having it be signed by him. But I must say that, you know, certainly despite perhaps our agreement with intent, we have to rely upon the statutes as written in guiding our actions and that, both from the department and from the legislative standpoint. And I would say I'd be happy to work with the department and folks in trying to perhaps take another run at providing some of these links in statute this year, because I do think there perhaps more guidance would be needed. There's a number of issues here to be addressed today. One is geographic distribution of the scholarships and that, and certainly rolling out a quality rating system takes some time. And how we do this in a thoughtful way is something that we should be debating here at this committee. But again, I think I kind of feel like I'm wearing two hats today. I support what you're trying to do, but I'm not clear that the statutory authority is there to move forward. And I'll leave it at that.
Comments or questions? Representative Erickson, and then Breyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Cadigan. Will the implementation of these scholarships require teaching of or alignment with the standards, you know, outlined in the early childhood indicators?
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, the part of the Parent Aware Quality Rating and Improvement System includes linking to the early childhood indicators of progress.
So, follow up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
So, Ms. Cadigan, what if a parent conscientiously objects, maybe for religious belief or something, receives a scholarship, but how are you going to deal with that? Or is there going to be no latitude?
Ms. Cadigan?
I'm not, Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, I think that the intent of the implementation plan is to provide scholarships in this first year to families who have a range of choices in the quality rating system. So I suppose if a family objected to some of the early childhood indicators of progress, they would have other options probably, such as CCAP and that kind of thing. I guess I'm not exactly sure what your question is.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Cadigan, well, there are parents out there who would like these scholarships, who would qualify for them, but some of that which is included in the indicators might be questioned by some of them, and I just want to know if you're going to allow for latitude, if you're going to respect. I happen to have heard from some faith-based providers with their concern for this, which is why I'm asking the question.
Ms. Cadigan?
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, it sounds like your question is really about the content of the indicators of progress and whether they would be objectionable to some families.
Who receive scholarships.
Who receive scholarships. So, just to reiterate, for programs to participate, it is voluntary. I do not think there would be an opt-out option with this implementation plan. I think that that's.
Representative Erickson, any follow-up?
I'm still thinking about, so go ahead. Come up.
Representative
Mr.
Reiner?
Chair?
Ms. Cadigan.
I'm sorry. Representative Erickson, I'm sorry to keep on this, but I'm curious about what someone would object to in the early childhood indicators of progress. And I'm not asking you, you know, at this moment, but I honestly would be interested to know if there's something in those standards which were reviewed by a large number of experts, including parents and other community members, that is objectionable. I think we'd want to know about that. So I'd appreciate follow-up.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Eric.
I will put those parents in contact with you.
That would be great.
Because some of what's in there is subjective.
Okay.
And I just want to know that they can qualify for scholarship and that their beliefs would be honored. Because I think it's a little discriminatory if they qualify for the scholarship, but they have a bit of conflict with one or two of the indicators, that they would have the ability to still receive the scholarship and have that honored.
It's It's always a nice thing when staff is willing to do our CS work for us, so we appreciate that. Thank you. We'll have the person. You have Ms. Cadigan's contact information, Representative Erickson?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Reiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it Dr. Cadigan? Am I correct? Is that?
It is.
Yes. All right. That's all right.
Karen,
I just wanted.
Karen is actually my preferred.
Well, all right. All right. Karen. You said a little bit about this in your presentation, but I wondered if you'd expand upon the issue of the adequate availability of programming outside the pilot areas in outstate Minnesota.
Dr. Cadigan.
Sure. So, Mr. Chair and members, the so because of our strong stance on wanting to link public money in a little more accountable manner and linking it to quality, it depends on the availability of supply and demand are closely linked here. And so there is a growing supply of programs that are rated in Parent Aware, but in some communities there may not be much availability as of today. However, there may be more availability 3 months from now, for example, as we invite more programs to participate.
Representative Brenner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is what you're saying that the department is actively soliciting participation in the rating system so that there'll be greater availability in the non-pilot areas?
That is correct.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I'm just going to call you doctor. It's easier than saying your last name. Doctor.
Yes, Representative.
I just want some strong comfort language that these provisions will be enacted fairly across the state. And I appreciate your saying you almost fully agree with my bill, so thank you for that. Anyway, you talk about range of choices and 3- and 4-star ratings and the Parent Aware. We don't have a lot of those things in outstate areas, so how do we work those things into doing this fairly and equitably for the kids who live in greater Minnesota?
Dr. Cadigan?
It's a great question. I should point out here that I'm from northern Minnesota, not from the metro, and so I have a particular fondness for the real world.
Let the record show the representative the, is in improving fashion, nodding at you.
So I want to emphasize here again that this appropriation is enough for 1% of eligible children. And so for those 1% for this first year, actually it's for, because of the way the statute was written, it's actually 2% the first year, but every year thereafter it'll be 1%. That we would want to offer scholarships in communities where we can be confident that there is a supply of programs, rather than offering scholarships in places where we're pretty sure there won't be choices for people. That seems like it would lead to all kinds of trouble. There are some other pilots that have gone on in the past, for example, the School Readiness Connections Program, which did some development of quality rating programs around the state. I can't remember offhand if there are any in Brandon, Starbuck, Evansville area, but there are some in Grand Marais, Stearns County, Lyon County. So we'll be looking both at the programs that are currently in Parent Aware, and as we invite other programs to participate in this next year. I guess I would reiterate too that this is just the 1 year of the plan, that we would hope that as time goes on, more programs, that anyone in the state that wanted to participate in the voluntary program could. Importantly, related to Greater Minnesota, also our quality rating system includes family child care, which is by far and wide the way that families get care and education for their children in Greater Minnesota, as you probably know. So we certainly take the needs of Greater Minnesota into consideration.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. So a single provider or neighbor down the road who has 10, 12 kids in her care, eventually they could qualify for this and be a provider that would be able to be in this program.
Of course.
Representative Anderson. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Cadigan, where from northern Minnesota are you?
The Duluth area, Duluth and surrounding areas.
As Representative Anzels will note, that's really not up north. Representative Ward.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm a Proctor boy, which is, Proctor overlooks Duluth. Anyhow, so I understand that, and that is northern Minnesota, as I want to make sure my good friend Representative Anzel Key knows that as well. Anyhow, Dr. Kagan, I'm like Representative Anderson, I have the concerns that Representative Anderson has as well and I like that you referred it to real Minnesota. Thank you for that. For real Minnesota, I would like to see a 60-40 split, but I think we can all live with 50-50. So my question is, and again, as Representative Anderson so correctly said, there's a lot of child care providers, that don't have parent-aware QRS, and that Representative Luna is correct from the standpoint of that, we do need to make sure that our dollars are spent effectively and efficiently and with good quality. So, we need to get there, and we need to keep working at that. And we also need to make sure that we are strongly investing in early childhood and quality child care and all of that, because we know that's the best investment we can make for our dollar, period. We all know that. So having said that, two questions. The first one is, is anybody letting outstate, greater, real Minnesota folks know, that this is coming up, that this is possible, that they should be moving towards that? What are you doing to let's not do something and then say, oh, now you can. Are we educating our people about this might be down the, there might be some resources here available for you. What are we doing with that?
Mr. Chair, I would say that's one of the great delights of being part of the Office of Early Learning is communicating with providers and families all over the state about what's available for them and what will be available for them in the months to come. So for Parent Aware, we will be inviting accredited child care programs and Head Start programs and school readiness programs all around the state to participate in this voluntary rating system. And we have an outreach plan for how we're communicating with programs about that. For the scholarships, once we identify what the other communities will be, we will rely on both public and private resources to communicate with families about eligibility.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what I heard you say is, yes, you are communicating with folks from all over the state, the possibilities here, to get engaged with what we know is the most important investment that we can make and should be making and focus on early childhood. Once we decide what's going to happen here, again with Representative Anderson, are you sure that the contacts that you're making are touching as many as, I'd like to see 100% of, child care folks connected with. Are we sure that we're doing that?
Representative Ward, that's a great question. It certainly is a balance of, we have a staged plan for how we'll go about doing this. We can't actually, we don't have the resources to rate if every single program in the state came forward next month or by November. So we have a staged plan that's based on counties and the rate of childhood poverty in those counties. And if the committee wanted further details about the Office of Early Learning Parent Aware plan, we certainly could. I could certainly get back to you with more details about that, or come back with other staff at another time.
Representative Ward,
thank you.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McHenry, Dr. whatever it is. My apologies. I hear people in committee always mispronounce names. I'm just not going to do it, so I'm just going to leave it at doctor. I was a supporter of Parent Aware as well, and I was one of the members who voted to retain that language last year. But there is there is actually differences between the implementation plan, obviously, and what we had on the floor last year, and there's a couple of significant ones. Actually, somewhat to the point of Representative Anderson about the distribution of the scholarship funds, it says, obviously, 3 or 4 star quality programs will be the only ones that receive subsidies or scholarships. And also, I don't think it's listed here, at least I don't see it, Head Start programs and center-based care programs receive automatic accreditation under the, or are automatically assumed to be high-quality programs as far as the scholarships are concerned. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, great questions. And this has been a little confusing for a variety of people. So a couple of things. One, the scholarships don't go directly to programs. They go to families. That's a really important part of the plan. And second, to your question about Head Start and school-based pre-K, so here's the issue. Head Start has tremendous amounts of quality supports and monitoring in place already based on the federal law. School-based programs likewise have some level of quality based on the school board that oversees the program. Child care, family and center-based child care, again, has this standard that is really about health and safety. It's about licensing. And so having, and licensing is star one, it's step number one of the quality rating and improvement system. So one intent of the system is to provide a rating information for families that helps compare apples to apples a little bit better. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, it was a very roundabout way of getting there. I think you said that Head Start does receive the automatic approval as well as school-based pre-K. Mr. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson, I apologize. I didn't answer that part of your question. So there is no automatic rating. There is an accelerated rating. Which means that those programs will participate in all of the process, except they will not have an additional person go out and observe. Those programs already have people that are observing in them. So a way, this is something that other states have done as well, in order to preserve resources for programs that need the most support. Those observers and coaches are saved for programs that don't have those resources right now.
I'm sorry, Chair. If I could continue, I've got a couple of questions. So there's an assumption that a certain part of the accreditation is done already. Is that correct? I know you don't. You're trying to stay away from the automatic, but there is an assumption. There is a criteria or an action that isn't taking place to get these particular types of care or pre-K, excuse me, to the level of rating to receive a scholarship. Is that correct?
So if programs have an accreditation, a national accreditation, that they follow a quality improvement process through that, we're not making them duplicate it. So in that regard, that's why it's accelerated. So, and again, those would be accredited child care, center and family child care, as well as Head Start and school-based pre-K programs.
Patrick Kenning, can you repeat that? I didn't follow that part.
So some programs already have national accreditation or other standards in place that are a level of quality that's beyond just health and safety. Probably the most common is the NAACI, the National Accreditation of the National Association for the Education of Young Children. It's a national accreditation that some centers go through. And that has quality standards that are transparent. We know what they are. And so rather than making those programs go through filling out paperwork, we know that if you come in with NAACI accreditation, for example, that the program meets a certain quality standard. It's not automatic. We still want to hear about it. You still have to document training, how you interact with parents, how you do assessment. So it's just accelerated in that regard.
So
does that help?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So a combination of the assumption of quality with these programs, as well as the point that you acknowledged in your response to, I believe, Representative Ward about the predominant form of care in outstate Minnesota being family-based care, the combination of those two factors, even if it's not overtly written into the implementation, does that not, and the specifics of the pilot, the four pilot zones, doesn't that create an automatic incentive for people to go into these center-based or school-based pre-K and Head Start programs, as well as disproportionately affect Greater Minnesota in a negative manner?
It's a great point, and I think it's exactly what we want to avoid happening, and that's why choosing the communities carefully, these communities that are not yet named, they're not named partly because we want to look for communities that have, maybe they have Head Start and a school-based program, but that they also have some child care choices. So if we were giving scholarships to families and communities where it was just all Head Start or school-based pre-K, that would not be our preference, because that's not really offering choice.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you.
So the NAICS certification, so this expedited process, is that available? You're saying that's available to private as well as public providers?
Of course.
Representative Downing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize for being late. So if you covered some of this, I'm glad to defer and catch you offline. But I'm wondering what the overlap between the implementation plan we see here from last year's legislation is with the new Race to the Top grant. And I'm guessing that's probably a nuclear submarine answer, so you can just kind of cover it at a high level. But I'm just wondering what the interactions are in general between the two programs.
Yeah,
first military reference of the day goes to Representative Downing. Dr. Cadogan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Downing, thank you for bringing up Race to the Top. There is not much overlap. There is a little. So the Race to the Top communities that will be getting significant support are a small area of Minneapolis and a small area of St. Paul. Those are the Northside Achievement Zone and the Promise Neighborhood in St. Paul. All of St. Paul and all of Minneapolis will also be eligible for scholarships, for a set number of scholarships, as you see on page 7 in the back. The other Race to the Top scholarship areas are Itasca County in the real world and the counties around White Earth, which happen to be some of the poorest counties in the state. Those will be families in those communities will be eligible for Race to the Top scholarships. Also, importantly, we have not yet set a per-child dollar amount for the Race to the Top scholarships, but it will be more than $4,000 per child. So it would be it would behoove, if families were eligible for both, they certainly couldn't use, the plan would be that they wouldn't be able to use both. They would likely choose the higher one. But we're working out those details, and I understand we'll be talking more about that next week, perhaps, Mr. Chair.
Representative Downing.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, if we're going to have another hearing, I can maybe shorten the questions about the Race to the Top grants and ask just one more. You described kind of the distributions of the funds and the zones that would be getting them. Just in terms of overall program structure, the use of the scholarships and the use of parent aware and all of the kind of internal processes and controls that you have, is there any difference between Race to the Top and how the initial pilot program here on the scholarships would be executed in your area, in your department?
Dr. Cadogan.
There are two differences that we wrote into the application. The details, again, are not yet worked out, and they are the dollar amount for children. Actually, there are three differences. The point of eligibility, so the point of eligibility for Race to the Top scholarships is 200% of poverty, and age range. There will be scholarships available for children starting at birth.
Representative Downing.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So a couple of questions as we think about this, because what we had last year, the original intent was that we would put an initial amount of money in for scholarships, and the original design was that the quality control mechanisms would be outside of the department, that they would be contracted, and now all of that has been executed, I think, just either by rule or executive order or what have you within the department or within the Department of Education, the Department of Human Services. And now we have this, I shouldn't say huge, I guess maybe to most people it's huge, you know, millions of dollars influx through Race to the Top. And my recollection of some committee hearings years ago was that a big part of the grant money that was originally contemplated pre-Race to the Top was to build a statewide system of early childhood education. And I hear the comments about, gee, the money or the participation in parent aware is going to be voluntary, but now we got a really big chunk of dough out there through this pilot thing. You're covering all of Minneapolis and all of St. Paul and reasonably large swaths of outstate Minnesota as well. And so I'll make a statement and you can correct me, or maybe I'll try and ask it as a question eventually, but I'm really concerned about this voluntary notion. And the sense that somehow we're actually honoring the spirit, I think, of the original MELF pilots, which was to really get the control in the hands of the parents and the families of these most at-risk kids. And now I get this sense that the big system is being built. And I always kind of protested against that in committee. So can you provide any evidence to the contrary that you aren't actually building a new kind of K-12 style system for early education that everybody's going to have to comply with, even though the window dressing of scholarships is still out there?
I sure can. Thanks for asking. I think one question I had to go back to a comment that you made, Representative Downey, is something about outside quality control, and I wasn't sure what you meant by that. By the way, I've only been in this job for 4.5 months, so if there were things that were alluded to last session, I don't necessarily know about them. So I'd be interested in hearing more about that. What I would say about the system is that the system is not about the size. It's about organization and accountability and effective use of resources. So that even in... It sounded like from your comments, Representative Downey, that you were concerned about something that would be mandated for all programs, all children. And I guess the main assurance we have that that won't happen is resources, because even this appropriation, as I've said, only is enough to serve 1% of the state's poor three and four-year-olds. So I honestly don't know what the dollar amount would be to have, even if someone thought it was a good idea, which I certainly don't, to have a mandated system that was the same for everyone for early childhood. That's not a good idea, and it would be tremendously expensive. So I don't know if that helps put your mind at ease, or if you have other specific questions. I'd be happy to...
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, it doesn't put my mind at ease, because the first sentence you said was, the system that we're building is not based on size but accountability, so that tells me that we are building a system over at the Department of Education, and what I think many of us had envisioned as being a very nimble, parent and child-focused, free to choose different kinds of solutions is, I mean, you can just see the kind of bureaucratic tendency to clamp down on that and to control it through these funding streams, and I think we should all be vigilant to guard against that so that we don't have some kind of big monolithic statewide system 10 years from now that we all then try and figure out how to fix. So just a couple thoughts. I know when we had the final report on Parent Aware, even the analyst was pretty clear that it wasn't absolutely predictive of quality. And what was interesting to me is it seemed like we were going to kind of then retrofit the analysis model to make sure that what we were calling parent aware was in fact somehow showing quality, and it seemed to me a little bit backwards, and it was some concern that many of us talked about after the final presentation. And so maybe some of that's because we just grandfathered in all of the Head Start programs without any discrimination on their actual quality. I mean, I don't know, there's a lot of questions about parent aware in general in a lot of states that doesn't really seem to be driving things towards quality. And there's alternatives out there. In the original bill, we had some discussions about actually having the Department of Education contract with a private entity to build and execute. And in my vision, it would have been a little bit more like Underwriters Laboratory quality, you know, or some kind of external private sector market-based system of quality. And if that's worth it to parents and centers to, you know, help educate consumers and attract consumers, that maybe they would all be willing to pay for it as compared to the state paying for it and building it. And now it looks like we're building it inside the Department of Education. I had a suggestion from one of the districts in my area that they were simply going to publish their own kindergarten readiness statistics on their website and indicate which centers that were sending kids into their kindergarten system had actually prepared, you know, kind of what percentage of kids. That's a little rough and maybe not as precise as your academic thing at the University of Minnesota or wherever you'll produce it, but it was a district responding to provide market-based information to consumers as compared to building this big, massive statewide system. And so anyway, I guess just this concept of it being voluntary, I don't think it's going to be voluntary eventually when you have money tied to it. The fact that we're building a system causes me a lot of concern, and I think there are truer market-based ways to deploy that money. And one thing that gets left out in all of this, and then I'll be quiet, we heard the statement made that we all know that early childhood is the best return on investment we can have. And, you know, I don't know what kind of control groups we measure that assessment on. But, I mean, honestly, the highest return on investment is when a family actually does its job and prepares their own kids for kindergarten readiness. And so much of what we talk about here is remediation, and there doesn't seem to be any recognition from a public policy standpoint that that should be the ultimate incentive that we have collectively, is to get families to the point where they can actually do their job. And so many of these things that we're building and now this big system seems like it's going to suck even more responsibility and authority from the very place where the best job and the absolute highest ROI can be done. So I'll leave it at that, and if you want to respond, you can.
Dr. Cadigan? No. Dr. Cadigan or Mr. McHenry, the appropriation right now, there was no appropriation for fiscal year 12. It was just for fiscal year 13. Do either of you know why?
No, Mr. Chair.
Mr. McHenry?
Mr. Chair, members, from what I understand, the reason that it was implemented $4 million instead of $2 million like it is in the out years is in order to present, or is in order to come up with an implementation plan for how we would distribute those scholarships.
That's partially right, Mr. McHenry. I'm the one who pushed it back to fiscal year 13, and the reason why was to give the administration and the department an opportunity to work with the legislature, to work with members on both sides of the aisle, to put together a remedy and an issue to sort of unlock this lock that had come up during the session of concerns about quality and making sure we were measuring quality, while at the same time making sure we weren't imposing burdens on facilities. And do you think that, since I'm the one who did it, I guess I can apply that metric, that's why it was done. Do you believe that test has been met?
Mr. Chair, members, appreciate you outlining that in more detail, since you were the one making the decision on that. I think from our perspective is what we feel is that moving forward in this report, or putting this report together, is we were trying to take all of the input that has been laid out there this past session and the sessions before to find a way to distribute these funds in the best manner. Obviously, they, like it has been said, the first year it would be 2% of eligible population. The other years it would be 1%, and we just want to make sure that if we're sending money out, that we're sending it out in the most appropriate manner, that we can get maybe the best return on investment with the limited funds available.
Within the confines of the law, of course, right?
Mr. Chair, members, yes.
From this member's perspective, you guys are jamming us. That's my perspective. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Cadigan, I'm still struggling with what you might have done outside the law. So can you remind us what requirements you have added for these providers that were not found in the statute we passed last year.
Dr. Kennedy.
Sure. We were charged with making an implementation plan with the provision of the families that would be eligible for the scholarships. And as you all know, it's a very thin statute. There wasn't much other guidance given. And that's what we did.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Harris.
So we have an age requirement, we have an income requirement, we have first come, first serve. Correct?
That's correct.
And Representative Harris, Mr. Members, you know, in the department in their implementation plan on page 6 actually has the members want to read this. So.
Yeah, I could probably open up to that, yes. But, Mr. Chair.
Representative Harris.
Thank you. But you have gone beyond that, correct?
Ms.
Cadigan.
Our implementation plan includes details that were not in the statute. That's right.
Representative Erickson.
So I'm feeling reluctant to say this is going to be well served when I think it sounds like it's going to shut out some parents because you've added these additional requirements or shut out some providers, and I'm struggling with that, and maybe you can't answer that right now, and maybe we'll find out later, but let me switch to the voluntary mandatory piece then. So you're going to spread parent aware across the state, is that correct?
Dr. Cadigan or Mr. McHenry?
Eventually, like over 4 years or 5 years or...
Dr. Cadigan? Mr. McHenry? Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, I think what we are trying to do is find a way under the requirements of eligible populations of how we can implement the disbursement of these scholarships in the most efficient manner. We have identified in this implementation report what we feel is the best way to implement that. We want to have these tied to quality, so we know that the money is being spent in the best possible manner. And areas that choose to participate would have the option to become rated to be eligible for these. Now, on a larger scale, the numbers of the eligible population based on $4 million in the first year is at 2% of all eligible participants. So that would leave several families and several children unable to take advantage of this as it is. And so what we're trying to do is find a way to make sure that we can distribute it as effectively as possible.
And Representative Woodard, I'll instruct the Sergeant at Arms to remove the distracting guest from the doorway.
Remove the little urchin from the doorway.
I'm just kidding, big guy. Do you want to introduce your guest, Representative Woodard?
Sure. I do have 4 out of 5 kids here today. They were at the school choice rally earlier today. Number 5 is roaming around the building somewhere at 4 months old, so hopefully his mother's with him.
Roaming around.
But, yeah, we're glad to have them here today. I do have a question, however.
Actually, no, I just wanted you to give me the opportunity to say hi.
I thought you were actually giving me
the
floor.
It doesn't give you the front of the line. Yeah. Representative Erickson, you still have the floor.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. McHenry, I'm still struggling with voluntary versus mandatory. Mm-hmm. Because I think what you're setting up is exactly what Representative Downey has been explaining. Suddenly we're going to have this mandate across the state, and you will have a new system, and we're going to have more government in the department, and parents aren't really going to be in control anymore. And that's even after the scholarships have expired. So how do you reconcile voluntary and mandatory in what you're setting up?
Mr. McHenry or Dr. Cadigan or
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, there is no mandate. It's a voluntary program.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But parents can only participate if there's a rating system.
Dr. Cadigan.
Mr. Chair, members,
McHenry.
Representative Erickson, again, what we have put forth in this implementation plan was took the list of what was in statute of who would be eligible for these scholarships and identify how we would implement the program. So what our goal was to do was, considering this was linked to 2% of the eligible population in the first year and 1% of the population in the out years, is that we wanted to make sure that we held that we linked those dollars to accountability in the early childhood system.
But Mr. Chair, and Mr. McHenry and Dr. Cadigan, you are building a new system for early childhood in this state. That's, in my mind, going to be discriminatory. That's enough said.
Mr. McHenry, do you have a comment?
Mr. Chair, and Representative Erickson, I don't have a response on that right now.
Representative Bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Dr. Cadigan and Mr. McHenry. And I just wanted to review just really quickly with ParentAware so that I understand. If I was a licensed provider, child care provider, how would I become ParentAware, you know, three-star or four-star? You mentioned licensing as being the first star. Mm-hmm. And then could you just review for me so that I understand clearly the two, three, four stars that are involved there?
Dr. Cadigan.
Mr. Chair, it might be better to actually, I can call. I'm trying to see if one of my colleagues who's a ParentAware expert is here. I'm going to ask one of my colleagues from the Department of Human Services to join us, and just to make sure that you can have all the details that you
need. Thank you.
Hi, please state your name for the record.
Hello, Deb Swenson-Klatt with the Department of Human Services Child Development Services Unit. Mr. Chair and Representative, it sounds like a description of the rating levels for the Planned ParentAware system would be helpful.
Yes, yes.
Okay. ParentAware is, as you mentioned, inclusive of four rating levels. And as expansion of the program moves forward, there are several categories of ratings that, or categories of quality measures that programs will be asked to respond to as they document their quality at each level. So they include physical health and well-being of, or practices related to supporting the physical health and well-being of children. Practices and aspects of quality related to teaching and relationships between caregivers or teachers and children. Also, the assessment of a child's developmental progress is another category of measures. And then finally, evidence of the types of teacher training or caregiver training and education. And so at each level, there are specific indicators related to those four categories, and they obviously increase in complexity and the quality of those indicators from the first to the fourth star level.
Representative Bills?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm so sorry, I did not catch your name.
Mr. Chair, Representative Deb Swenson-Klatt.
You can always refer to her as a testifier.
Okay, testifier. Ma'am, I'll just call me. All right. So, so then what would I have to do after I achieve these things? So the relationships, I've proven the relationships, the assessments, the evidence. Then what would I do if I was a licensed daycare provider? Is that a year after year? What do I do to maintain the three or the four star?
To the testifier.
Mr. Chair and Representative, we envision a rating process that would invite participating programs to return for a new rating every 2 years. During the pilot of ParentAware, we had a one-year renewal or re-rating process.
Okay.
Thank you. And the reason why I ask is because I see, I look at the list of school-based pre-kindergarten programs, Head Start programs, licensed child care centers, licensed family child care programs, and maybe for in-house and people who run those facilities. And I just wonder, you know, because it looks like we're giving this money, we're granting this money, or subsidizing or whatever, and because we see a great thing coming out of early childhood and it helping people, and I see that and I understand that, but then there's an economy of scale issue when it gets into one lady who's running. I just see this. It gets into an issue where, you know, one individual running her business in her home, and then the number of hours and documentation and possibly, you know, fees or money that's involved in doing that. I just don't want to see smaller programs that might be able to meet some of the needs of these families go away. And if a parent's already using a non-parent aware program, and suddenly, you know, the scholarship comes in and this provider's not three or four stars, and maybe it's just because, again, she's just a smaller firm within that structure. And does that then means that child needs to go to a different place? So I don't necessarily like that. But I do think, you know, when we talk about it, then I've heard a couple of economic terms, you know, the apples to apples and effective use of resources, and the comment about the statute being thin and just laying out, you know, really basics and then something being kind of lost in transition between application or implementation and legislation is I think it really gets into, you know, Representative Downey brought this up, and I think different people are thinking of it or mentioning it, is that we put this, yeah, it's thin, but then it's going to go into the market to be allocated, and certainly, you know, the market, all economists would agree that the market allocates efficiently. Now, there are also market failures. There are things like externalities or monopolies that we deal with in markets. But we believe, I think what was believed in the statute is that here's a program, allow, you know, people to make choices, and then people make choices, but because of a great name down the block, oh, that's Barb's daycare or whatever, and she does an incredible job, and I think that's what we're more relying on than you know, to choose or to try to implement a program because we believe that there'll be a failure to, hey, find the right person for the job because there's not perfect information. And I think that if you have a very market-based legislature giving a market-based solution, and then you know, it just so happens that in this case an agency or a department that thinks, you know, well, we have to try to get in here and create this the parent aware program so that then people will have accurate information, and that's how we'll allocate those resources. You know, reasonable people can disagree, but I think that's what's being missed here that's what's kind of battling it's rational thought or rational choice economics versus behavioral economics, and I see that's the problem. And that's just how I see it. But that's all I had, Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson?
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. And I need some more feel-good language from Mr. McHenry as a follow-up to Representative Erickson's question when she asked if this was going to be rolled out statewide. And I listened as carefully as I could, but I didn't hear you use anything in your answer about geographic distribution. Please help me out here.
Mr. McHenry.
Mr. Chair, members, a great question. Thank you. I think we are starting this based on 2% of the eligible population. We know that that's not going to be able to get to the entire extent of the population necessary. We do want to make sure that this that quality or early education scholarships are able to go across the state. We would like to see that if that is what the communities desire. But that being said, we feel that this is, while we're very, very appreciative and appreciate the work of you all on this issue to put forward these scholarships, that we want to make sure that they are tied to quality. We do want to make sure that there are options. This is one of the options. We view this as more of a you know, we look at maybe the K-12 system, we view this as maybe the implementation process of, you can see the differences, maybe comparisons to higher ed, where there still are different choices in that manner. But we feel that we would like to see eligibility across the state, but we feel that that's up to the that's up to the areas to decide if they want to participate in being quality rated.
And see, and that's the problem, Mr. McHenry. That's not what the legislation says, and that's not why we did it. That's the concern. You just crystallized it perfectly there. It's not up for the areas to decide. It's not up for the department to decide. This was for parents to decide.
Yes.
That's and as someone who participated in the negotiations, sat across from the governor, that is the concern. So, Representative Anderson, you have the floor. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McHenry, I will give you some credit here. I do like when you said possible implementation of the K-12 level. That sounds like an interesting idea, and I have a bill that you might like that goes along those same lines. But I do have a question about the parent-aware system today and people who are participating in that. Do you have a stat on how many of those groups are public entities versus private entities?
Mr. McHenry or Dr. Kettigan or someone behind?
I'm not sure we have the most accurate data on that, but we will certainly find out the answer and get back to you, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Representative Woodard?
Yep, thank you. And just one more follow-up question, too. You had mentioned earlier that one of the key aspects of the program is that parents are the ones who receive the check, right? So not the institution itself, whether it's a public or private. And can you kind of elaborate on why you think that's important?
Mr. Chair, Representative, they don't actually receive a check, but they receive a...
You mail them cash?
EBT card.
They receive a money order. No, they don't.
Dr. Kettigan.
The scholarship paperwork itself. They receive the scholarship paperwork itself.
Vouchers,
you know,
the
scholarships, right?
Oh, I see where you're headed, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, Dr. Kathy. Please continue with your testimony.
So I think this issue that Mr. McHenry started to articulate is a relevant one here, and that is that the early care and education market in Minnesota, as in most states, is almost entirely private. That is, most of the money that is used to pay for care and education comes directly out of families' pockets. There are some supply-side things that are funded publicly and privately, like private preschools and public programs like Head Start. But that having parents be engaged in the decision-making is a critical part of it. The problem is that parents don't have good information about choices. And, you know, there have been surveys on this, both with parents, 96% of whom say that parents should have access to the best available information to help them find the best places for preparing children for kindergarten, and surveys from the public in which 73% of Minnesotans agreed that we should only allow tax dollars to be spent on early childhood providers who have proven they're effective in preparing children for kindergarten. So I think the part of parent choice is really critical, and that's exactly why, that's exactly the idea behind Parent Aware, is to give parents good information for making choices.
Representative Woodard?
I said one more question, and this is the one more question. So when it looks, I think Representative Erickson was kind of getting to this as well, some of the faith-based private sector early education programs that are out there, is that a problem at all from a quality aware or parent aware standpoint, that those would receive state funds?
Representative and Chair Garofalo, the private sector, including faith-based, is actually a very important part of the early childhood market. Those programs make a significant amount of the market, and those programs would be eligible, as all other programs are, for scholarships.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Myra, you can get over the cooing of the baby.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Kettigan, earlier you mentioned that some communities would be able to have, you'd go into and others not. there would be scholarships given in some communities, not other communities. And I'm wondering how the department's implementation plan follows statute, which says the Department of Education shall make the scholarships available on a first-come, first-served basis if some communities, some parents, and some children will be excluded from it.
Dr. Cadigan, Mr. McHenry.
Mr. Chair, Representative Myra, again, I think that what we feel is that the statute is outlining the eligibility, and it is based, the eligibility requirements, and the next step is the implementation process based on those eligibility requirements. So what we did in this report is take the eligibility requirements as well on a first-come, first-served basis, and incorporated that into our implementation plan that you see in front of you.
Representative Myra.
Mr. Chair, Mr. McHenry, I am concerned about, you had commented earlier about funds going out, scholarships going out, and we wanted to have a quality program. When I voted for this, I thought it was the parents who were going to determine the quality, not the Department of Education through Parent Aware.
Representative McHenry. God help us with that. Mr. McHenry.
Mr. Chair, Representative Myra, thrown off a little bit by that. I apologize. Thrown off a little bit too much. Do you mind repeating the question?
I never underestimate my ability to derail any train of thought, Mr. McHenry. Representative Myra.
Mr. Chair, Mr. McHenry, earlier you talked about the implementation of the program and wanting to make sure that the scholarships were going to quality of care. And when I voted on this, I thought the person determining the quality was going to be the parent, not the Department of Education.
Mr. McHenry.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Myra, we still want parents to make that decision. We think by doing it in this manner that we are providing some details to help parents make that decision.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Myra. McHenry, so if, say I'm a mom and I've got my children in daycare, I'm very pleased with the quality of care that they're receiving, and I qualify, and my children qualify, but the provider doesn't qualify. They aren't a 3 or 4 under Parent Aware, so I have to rip them out of that relationship that's been developed over a couple of years. How are you going to deal with that?
Mr. McHenry.
Mr. Chair, Representative Myra, I don't think our intention is to take anybody out of a situation where they would like to have their kids in early education or in daycare. We think we want the parents to make that decision. We do want to make sure that we have the information available for those parents. And I think that it would be up to the parent to decide that if they wanted to be able to use this scholarship at this location, they could make the decision either to ask if they would become, if they would try to find a way to become quality rated, or maybe make the decision to go elsewhere. But that would be up to the parent. Again, we appreciate the scholarship money that has been made available, that you all made available last session. We want to make sure that we put that to the best use possible. And at the same time, through the Department of Education, we do want to make sure that is connected to educational outcomes. So we want to make sure that as we are implementing these scholarships, that we do have some information available to parents to help make that decision, regardless of where they go. They can make that decision.
Mr. Chair, Mr. McHenry. So you would be fine if parents were informed of the. You would be fine if parents were informed of the ratings, but then they could take those scholarships anywhere they wanted to.
Mr. McHenry.
They could make an intelligent decision.
Correct answer is yes, Mr. McHenry.
Mr. Chair, Representative Myra, we want parents to make the decision that they feel is best. We feel that this provides the best. We feel this provides some information, and as this is linked to these scholarships, that we feel that they should be linked to quality. And if the parent decides that that he or she feels that another establishment can provide a better environment, that the parent can make that decision.
Without the scholarship.
Mr. Chair, members, yes.
Representative Dietrich, were you seeking recognition?
Yeah, I was.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was at first a little confused by this whole discussion, not totally following it. But what has been spoken so far, I would just like to just add a little bit different perspective. But before I do that, I would just recommend possibly one thing, and that is that I think we need a bit bigger, better picture of how this money really does flow, because a lot of people are talking about it just from a philosophical bill perspective, that type of thing, interpretation. And I think some sort of a flow chart as to here's the scholarship money of approximately how much it costs to send your child to a preschool, how it flows to the parent, what the parent's choices are, how they type of thing, and then that type of thing. Because I'm just really kind of baffled by the more we talk about it. But I will just comment about the whole two things, parent choice and the free market. I don't understand why we would be developing a new program if all we want is to give people money and let them go to whatever preschool they want. And if that is the case, then let's just say that, because then I don't support this. I am interested in moving this state in a different direction as far as early education, to high-quality early education, something that gives us a true return on the dollar, something that truly sends to children to kindergarten ready. And if this money is not going towards some sort of quality indicators, then let me know, because then I'm going to flip my support. So I would just like this committee to get a little bit more clear. The other thing is the free market concept here. The free market works in a lot of different areas, and it usually is when you consume something over and over and over again. For myself, I only had three children. So I can't keep consuming the preschool market so that I can gather information and figure out which preschool is actually the best. And in fact, for my first two children, supposedly had the best reputations in town, highest quality preschools in the whole area. And I sent them there just not because I worked, because I wanted them to have the socialization and all that other stuff. So, but I look back, and that was a wrong decision. I did not care, and the only reason that I know now that it was a wrong decision, though, was because my third child had a learning disability, and he went to the public preschool. And the public preschool was far and above superior, preparing him for kindergarten, than the other option for my other two. Now, if I had 5, 6, 7, 8 more kids, I could now utilize the free market. But you don't. You don't depend, you don't have the number of children to make the free market work in a situation like this. And the bill clearly says 3 and 4 year olds, so you only get 2 years at that market. And so you need some information to make decisions about using the market before you send your child there, not after. And if you are so convinced that the preschool that you're using is so far superior, then I would guess you would not compromise your own morals and take the money. You would just continue keeping your child in that preschool. So I'm done. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dietrich. Mr. McHenry or Dr. Cadigan, the administration portion of this right now in fiscal year 13, there's a $4 million budget. We're talking about administration of, I think it's $320,000. I think that's the number that's listed in the implementation plan. Is that, I think that's right. That's $350 per scholarship recipient. That seems awfully high. Can someone give me some guidance on why
Mr. Cadigan. Chair, the implementation set aside of this implementation plan is, the administrative set aside, I should say, is up to 8% of the total budget. And that will depend on largely on what the other communities are in Greater Minnesota. If there's a single source, for example, a resource and referral agency or a community action agency in the state that could manage all of these, that has relationships and infrastructure and capacity to manage state grants, or it might be a couple of other places. But that's a detail that we don't yet no, partly because we haven't identified the other communities in greater Minnesota.
But Dr. Cadigan, we just were talking about the geographic limitations on this. Are we thinking that other regions besides the four identified earlier will actually be available in fiscal year 13?
Yes. Yes. I apologize, Mr. Chair, if that wasn't clear. So the current plan is that 60% of the resources will go to the initial four pilot areas, which are Wayzata School District, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Blue Earth and Nicollet counties. The other 40% will go to other communities in greater Minnesota that have not yet been identified as programs come into Parent Aware.
And if those are all
in Itasca, St. Louis County area, then perhaps there would be one agency up north. But if some are in Lyon and Pipestone and Redwood and some are Manoman Way, then there might be two different agencies. We're not quite sure.
Taking that issue and putting it to the side, because there's an issue to carry forward here on the scholarships, and we'll discuss that later. With regards to the administration, though, that works out to about $350 per scholarship recipient. I think there's 960, I think, is the number. So that seems, when we're providing $4,000 of services to kids, it's not done with the intent of providing them $3,650 and $350 going to administration.
Well, Mr. Chair, it's a great question. It's something we absolutely thought carefully about. Every penny you don't have directly go to kids and families, you have to have a reason for. What we learned from the initial implementation of the pre-K allowances and the scholarships in St. Paul is that in a new community, doing the outreach around this is significant. It may be that, you know, in the years to come that administrative fee will go down because it becomes more of the sort of common knowledge of what's available for families. But right now, you know, there had been a problem in the past in terms of scholarships being available and families not even knowing enough about it to access them. And so we didn't want to do that. That was the reasoning behind it, Mr. Chair.
So, Dr. Cadigan, the administration of this is not simply receiving the first-in application, processing it, and determining eligibility. It's also outreach of member service locations as well as parents.
Yes, yes, Mr. Chair. Connecting with the community is a critical part of this plan and one of the pieces that will make it as successful as it could be.
And again, going now to the carry forward issue, in the event of we're working on a program that is designed as first come, first serve, it appears that if we don't have these programs up and running, we are going to be deferring those payments into fiscal year 14. Is that correct?
Let me look at the statute.
Well, what the statute says is that if it's not all expended, it can be carried forward.
Oh.
But what the department is proposing is taking 40% of it, moving it to the side, and restricting it so in the instance they could be creating a carry forward balance. I see someone shaking their head behind you, but that's what it says.
No, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, if I gave that impression.
Okay.
That's not our intention.
Okay, so you, Dr. Cadigan, you just said 40% of the funds are going to be put aside for Greater Minnesota, correct?
Yes.
Okay. If those services are not up and running by the end of fiscal year 13, what would happen to those funds?
We would move the money, as is written in the implementation plan and as is written into the statute, I believe, to areas where there are programs available.
But Dr. Cadigan, you're not going to know that until the services, it's too late to provide the services. It's going to be the end of the fiscal year.
Excuse me, Mr.
Dr. Cadigan.
There are currently in the four pilot areas enough providers that could use all of the scholarship money now. So there are some concentrated areas in the state that would be able to use the scholarship money, but we're trying to build supply in other parts of the state to be fair. So,
did you get that, Representative Anderson? So now we're on the flip side of the argument that. Now we're on the opposite side of the argument that we've got plenty of need in a metro-centric program. This is one of the concerns. If you look on the date of the bill, you'll see Representative Anderson came to us in early January with concerns about this program being metro-centric. And we can't have it both ways. If the programs are spooled up and ready to go, then we have a geographic distribution problem that's non-existent. The flip side is, if they're not ready to go, we have a metro-centric program. Dr. Cadigan, I'm not asking you to agree or disagree with me, but do you understand the concerns of Representative Anderson, myself, and others about how one of those two things is going to happen.
I absolutely do. And I guess one thing I could say about it is that what the programs look like, the supply of programs, what it looks like today, will look different in, say, June when the scholarships start happening. So,
okay. And Dr. or Mr. McHenry, when do you envision beginning the process of scholarships being submitted by parents? Obviously, the funds can be appropriated July 1st, but when does the scholarship process begin?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure we have an exact date, but sometime around that same time period.
Okay. Representative Downey, Breinert, Quam, Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll make a request maybe of the chair, and it sounds like perhaps we're going to come back to this topic.
We will.
I'd like to ask for three specific things from the department when they come back next. And the first is I'd like to get an update on the assessment of the quality, the parent aware system, and how accurately it is actually kind of driving towards the quality outcomes. And my recollection is that those correlations were barely discernible when I saw the final report, and perhaps they've tweaked that, but I'd like to get an update on that. The second thing, to add on to Representative Dietrich's request around kind of a process flow on the funding, I'd like to see the entire kind of organization and the people and the process and the IT systems and all this stuff that's being built around all of this, and specifically within Race to the Top as well. I'm really concerned that we're going to be building some big engine over there that will be impossible to decommission ever. And then thirdly, I'd like to get an explicit commitment from the governor himself or the commissioner that they won't be pursuing unionization of the daycare or the child care providers getting the subsidies, the scholarships, similar to what they're trying to do to the daycare providers to get the subsidies. I want to make sure we're not kind of driving in that direction and get some explicit kind of confirmation and certainty around that.
Representative Downey, what I'll do is we'll have staff put together a list of information we would like from Mr. McHenry or the doctor, and we will, if you have additional information, please contact Committee Administrator Withers, and we'll make sure we get that on the list, and we'll make sure that all members of the committee get access to that information. Thank you, Representative Downey. Who is next? Representative Breinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a small point, but there has been some insinuation that the rating system we're talking about is being driven by the department, and I just want to remind members that the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation is a private sector partnership. This initiative was 4 years of research driven by the business community. My community was part of the pilot, and Glenn Taylor and the Taylor Corp were significant drivers. So there is a strong community interest that is not coming out of the Department of Education in the success of this rating system.
Thank you, Representative Breinert. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What am I supposed to tell the people, the parents, the kids, in the third largest city of the state, which has greater than the average for minority students and population, which has over 50 languages spoken? What am I supposed to tell them that they don't qualify, that they can't come first come, first serve, and be involved in this? We have a large and very diverse immigration population or immigrant population that could utilize this for their students, for their kids, to help them. And I'm just flabbergasted that you ignore such a large area of need. And like I said, the third largest city in the state of Minnesota.
I didn't ignore anyone. I didn't. Well, you meant the testifiers. Okay. Mr. McHenry or Dr. Cadigan, do you have a response?
Mr. Chair and Representative, I am moved by your passion about the diversity issues in your community. I'm happy that you're speaking up about them. And if the budget were to allow, we would be happy to have more families be eligible for this. But it doesn't allow it right now.
Representative
Mr. Chair, in reading the legislation, the statute, I don't see anything in there that excludes this population. The only thing I see excluding this population are rules and guidelines by the agency to try and implement. First come, first serve doesn't say that if you live here, yay, you can be in line. If you live there, you can't.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When you submit that information to us after Mr. Withers has the list ready, I'd like to know where the Head Start programs are in this state, how many of them have the quality rating system, so that when you're looking at this 40%, I want to make sure that we don't go heavy on Head Start programs, because I think we're finding that they're not the most effective child care programs as the research is being rolled out more and more all the time. And I know in greater Minnesota that would be a tendency when you hopefully get to us to put them in Head Start programs. And I just would be uncomfortable with seeing scholarship money go there when the research is saying that Head Start is not the effective program that we were once told it was.
Dr. Cadigan and Mr. McHenry, we'll add that to the list of questions and make sure that staff supplies that to you afterwards.
Very good.
Is Lori Davis here? Do you know, Mr. McHenry, did Ms. Davis write the report, the implementation plan?
Mr. Chair, members, as we stated before, this was written by Dr. Cadigan.
Dr. Cadigan, you wrote this?
I wrote this report in conjunction with my staff sitting behind me. Yes. Lori Davis is not an employee of the Department of Education.
She didn't write this report?
No, sir. No, sir, she did not.
Representative Loon.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and the hour's late. I won't keep anyone other than just to... I wanted another chance to circle back and again restate and associate myself with the remarks of Representative Dietrich. I do think it's important, if we're going to put taxpayer money into helping young children, just as into any program we would put taxpayer money into, we want to be assured of quality. And I think all of the members of this committee, and I would hope the legislature, all want to do good things for our children and families. I think we are united in that purpose. How you get there can be done in a number of ways. And I think, you know, there's been some good discussion here, certainly some questions about parent aware, what the best way is to go about quality, how do you maintain the relationship and the ability of parents to be sort of ultimately in control in that and bringing them along. So I just wanted to say that I want to continue to work with the department, and I think a number of members here, on how we grapple with how to do this and how to roll this out. I do have concerns about what I think is a little heavier tilting than should be to rating of some of our government programs, Head Start and school readiness. And that's nothing against those programs, just that most of those opportunities for early childhood are going to occur in private settings. And we need to do more to reach out to those communities. I think there's a bit of skepticism on that, and I think maybe by backing away from some of those strong alliances with some of our government programs and focusing more on whether it be a private family provider or community or something, and developing a better trust level there, that this is not a mandate but more a partnership in offering the ability for quality to be increased for all of our kids, and that we want to do that with parents and not tell parents what's good for their kids, but offering to be partners with their parents as they have to go to work, as they have to go to school, and do whatever they can to improve their economic status for themselves and their children. So I hope that you will take away from this hearing today the understanding that many, many members want to work with you in trying to find the best way to do that, with really good points raised from all sides of this important situation.
And members, I also wanted to thank Representative Slawick. I invited her to, she was sitting out in the peanut gallery and figured she deserved an opportunity to sit at the table with us. And yeah, absolutely, Representative Slawick, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Representative Loon's points and all your points, I think you all do have good points. I mean, it's sort of like if you were at the Humphrey thing yesterday, you each had an orange and you had to figure out how to split it up, and you had the same thing. And if you went home without the orange, your mother was going to be mad at you.
He wasn't there.
And, oh, that's right. Oh, well, that was one of the things we talked about. And
I was at my job.
I think actually the department did probably the easiest report. They took the places they had funded in the past, and they funded them again. So I don't think they were gammon or anything. I think they did what was easy. I think that it's harder, and I think that there needs to be a lot more thought put into it. And some of them know after it was written. I said, well, I don't think anybody got any input. I didn't have a lot of input into the report. So if you all didn't, neither everybody was equal on that standpoint. So yes, there is a lot of room for moving forward, and it's not perfect. And I think a lot of the questions that you asked were good. So we'll see what happens next.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you again. Any closing comments, Mr. McHenry or Doctor?
No.
Mr. Chair, members, the only thing we say, thank you for having the opportunity to discuss this, and appreciate all the questions raised, and look forward to looking forward to a letter from Mr. Withers and getting those responses back to you.
Thank you much, members. With nothing else, this meeting is adjourned.